Hey guys, so this is part two of an episode where I have Dr. G joining me, and I'm very excited. If you did miss, the first half of this interview, then you will definitely want to go back and listen, or you could just listen here and then circle back later. But what I'm trying to say is you won't want to miss it because Dr. G is like a wealth of knowledge, and there is so much information here that I'm frantically trying to take notes and ask questions at the same time. So Dr. G, thanks again for joining me.
I'm so glad to be back with you, Cassie. Thanks.
So we were talking about stress, the stress of the new school year. And so these new questions that I want to throw your way are more, I want to say, focused on my students and just kind of identifying stress in them. So how might our students, and I'm just diving right in. I'm not even like,
yeah, let's do it.
Intro. Let's just go for it. How might our students this year be affected by our stress and anxiety? Because they are little bitty mirrors, these people that we teach.
So they are. And the high schoolers are big mirrors, right?
I don't know. I stay away from them.
They really are. So we talked in our last episode about how the teacher at the front of the room, no matter how old the students, has a lot of social power and a great deal of influence. Just like anybody who's listening has ever lived with kids knows that their mood might affect you, but not as much as your mood affects them. That there is a real trickle-down economy of irritability or optimism or joyfulness. And I don't mean as a character trait. I mean, in that moment, whatever you're putting out as the adult in the room, you are going to get more of it back. And that is really important to remember about your behavior. Just like with our students, like we talked about, you know, that we have rules for their behavior, but we have space for their feelings. You too. You want to guide your behavior without criticizing yourself for your feelings. Your feelings are yours. And I want you to have as much compassion and empathy and grace for yourself as you do for your most struggling student, because you deserve it.
This is the truth. I feel like I deserve a whole bunch of grace this year. A big part of going back to school is getting into a new routine. For me, this has meant like not staying up until maybe 3 a.m. and then sleeping until 11, but I digress. I don't know why the school hours haven't changed to accommodate how much we teachers have stayed up at night.
Your lips to God's ear. It would be so good.
And being flexible, knowing things are going to continue to change. Like there for a while before school started, it was like an everyday fluid kind of mushy schedule. This might happen. No, wait, this is what we're going to do. I just gave up reading emails because I just thought, you know, when y'all figure this out, just then come and get me.
How your administrators don't listen to your podcast, do they?
No, it's probably a good thing. Yeah. How can students and teachers prepare not only for a new routine, but one that might not even stay a routine for long?
So I'm going to encourage you to think about structure rather than routine.
Got it.
Routine implies the logistics being the same, that the time of day that we do something, you know, at 9:39, this bell rings and we move from this area of the classroom to this area of the classroom. That's routine. Feels like everything is predictable. Structure is everything has some boundaries we can count on. So if you decide, Cassie, like we talked about, that maybe you're going to start every class with a check-in of some kind, what color are you today check-in, or a show me the funniest thing you're wearing today check-in, or whatever it is, sing me one bar of the music in your head check-in, whatever it is, I'd encourage you to make it something that would work virtually and in person. So that structure, that touch point can stay the same. Have you ever seen preschoolers with their caretakers, not at school, but with their caretakers on a playground? Like babysitter, parent, grandparent, doesn't matter. When it's preschoolers, what you see is usually the grown-up goes and sits on a bench, and the child, especially a 2 or 3-year-old, stays between their legs with a hand on the leg and then ventures out and comes back and ventures out a little further and comes back. It's like the adult is home base. and they just want that touchstone. And they might go and play, but they keep glancing over. Most kids, a few kids like mine, will run for the hills. But in general, they're looking for their touchstone. They don't need to hide behind you. They just, you're like a holy relic. They just have to rub you every once in a while to feel okay. And in that same way, the structure that you provide for your students, whether they are 4 or 14 or 17, is that touchstone for them, that there are certain things that they're going to be able to count on. And if you develop those, and they don't have to be several in a day, but if you have one or two, maybe the beginning and the end of your class time, that fit the mission of your educational brand, you know, that really fit mm-hmm. what you're trying to do. So maybe, Cassie, one of your first things is you really this year want to be focused on your students' social and emotional health. And another thing you want to focus on, and I'm making this up, but it's a fair bet because you're an art teacher, is that you want to encourage creativity.
Things sound great, yes.
Okay, so maybe mm-hmm. the first thing you do is that check-in, and the end you ask them about one wacky idea they have, or you have a creativity moment, and that can look like anything. But when you're virtual, you're going to start with your check-in and end with your creativity moment. And when you're in class, you're going to do the same. And that structure is going to make it easier for your students to weave back and forth. It's also going to make it easier for you to weave back and forth, because there'll be some touch points that you can count on and they can count on. And you'll create some memories that don't depend on where you all physically are or how you're connecting. The biggest thing that I think will really help, that research shows really helps build resilience for kids in times of stress and uncertainty, and for adults, is what I'm trying to model for you now. It's called when, not if, language. So I've been saying when you go virtual and when you're in person, when a student has to quarantine because someone in their home is sick, when you're not able to be in school because you weren't feeling well, but you're maybe not feeling so badly that you're still choosing to teach from home. Whatever it is, use that when language, because that allows your students and yourself to move past the, if that happens, it would be a catastrophe. If that happens, it would be a failure.
That's amazing. That's a great idea, because especially since, like I said, things are so fluid, it is really, a lot of it is a matter of when. And my next question I was going to ask you, I feel like I already know what you're going to say.
Oh, fun.
Because we kind of talked about it in the last episode. But my question is it better, because we're told this a lot, fake it till you make it. Is it better to fake it till we make it for the sake of our students, or be open with them?
This is not actually a clear-cut answer.
Oh, I thought for sure you were going to say be open with them.
What I want you to be able to do is to be authentic with your students. Mm-hmm. That doesn't require you to be transparent.
Ah.
And that's a really important difference. First of all, there are some things that your students would really like to know about you that are none of their business.
Tell me about it.
And they won't hesitate to ask you. I had this amazing experience right after college. I was working 17 part-time jobs to make it all work. And one of them was as a playground monitor at an elementary school. And so during second grade recess, after I'd been there a month, there were a group of girls around me because I was the adult, so I was the coolest person there. And they were interrogating me. Do you have a boyfriend? And I answered them. I said, yes. And one child said, do you sex each other?
Oh my goodness.
And luckily, although as you might imagine, this is pretty rare, I was struck speechless. And another child says, what is that?
Oh no.
And now I'm just trying to figure out, like, can I fake a seizure? Is there an earthquake that might pop up? What in Illinois? What's going to happen? But before I can formulate some words to speak in any direction, another child answers with something that turned out to be factually incorrect. But they were off, right? So authenticity, being your true self, I think that's really important. Meaning, if you are someone who loves to get up in front of your classroom, but you're trying to help a child who's shy, pretending to be shy will not help, because they have seen who you authentically are. And if, as happened to my child's second grade class, you've had a death in the family, but for whatever reason, you're there teaching that day virtually or in person, or let's use a more likely example. You're teaching that day, but you're worried about someone you love. There's something going on in your family or a friend or whomever, and maybe in your teacher faculty group. There's a part of your brain that's thinking about them. Having the authenticity to say, kids, if I seem distracted today, it's because I have someone I care about that I'm worried about. Please gently remind me if I get off task. I saw a teacher do something I thought was great. I saw her say to a group of students when I was there volunteering at the back of the room, I saw her say, children, I'm having trouble controlling my words and my behaviors right now. I need a 2-minute timeout. Can you all watch the clock or be quiet and continue your work for 2 minutes while I have a timeout so I can better remember to control my words and my behaviors? And they were all like, yes. And they watched that clock for 119 seconds and then said, you're done now, you can get up. And she's like, oh, thank you, children. I am better able to control my words and my behaviors. I needed that, thank you.
That is sheer genius.
Right, I think she really did need it. I don't think anything about that was fake. And she was modeling for them what she wanted them to see, and that nobody's perfect and everybody has trouble with self-regulation, but she didn't tell them why, and she didn't tell them the full scope of all of her feelings. And I think that for high school teachers, it's different than elementary school teachers. And I think, your one-on-one relationship with a student is different than your relationship with a group. So I don't think there's one clear-cut answer, but I don't think that authenticity requires total transparency.
Thank goodness. But I love that. I especially love the putting yourself, quote unquote, in a timeout.
Yeah.
Because then that also normalizes when a student has to go there, that it's not it's not a bad thing. You just need a break. And it's good for them to see, oh, look, even as an adult, I need a break to get control of.
This is a behavior management technique, yes. Not a punishment.
Yes. So our students have spent the last several months in a variety of home environments that span from, the structured home to on the opposite end of that spectrum, it could be a home that's chaos. So what should we be prepared to expect from them emotionally, whether they're coming back in person or virtually?
I want to remind you of something you know. Sounds so simple when I say it, but it really is a good reminder for me with each of my patients and for you with your students. You don't even know what you don't know. You don't even know the scope of what you don't know about what this child is worried about, what this child feels insecure about, what this child can count on and cannot count on at home. And even if you're in a small town and you know all the families, just like you never see the inside of somebody else's marriage, really, you often don't know what's happening inside other people's homes, even if you worship with these people, even if you shop next to these people, even if you grew up with these people. So, and we make more assumptions about people that we think look like us, pray like us, act like us, talk like us, than we make assumptions about people that we know are different. So although assumptions are damaging in every situation, we're more inclined to judge when I think I know you. So I really want to encourage teachers to remember that when you're getting frustrated or worried, I'm not telling you how to feel. Feel your frustration, feel your worry. Also try to link that feeling to getting curious. When a child's behaving in a way that frustrates you, in addition to putting boundaries around their behaviors, try to get curious about what's happening here, what's really going on. And I say this to parents all the time because parents, we're experts in our kids. So if they're behaving badly, it's not because there's something that, isn't going well for them. It's just that obviously they're being a little pain. But if we can remember that if we're feeling frustrated, because if I'm feeling frustrated, then something isn't meeting my expectations, not my hopes, not my rules, my expectations. If a child, Cassie, that you expect to act out a little bit acts out, you're not as frustrated as if the child that you don't expect to act out acts out. Frustration is about mismatched expectations more than it is about behavior. So when you find yourself getting frustrated, keep in mind, something you were expecting didn't happen. Can you get curious about that at the same time?
Yeah, because sometimes you can just get caught up in your frustration. So you almost have to take a step back from that and just look at it from a different point of view.
Acknowledge your frustration, put the boundary of the consequence that you have to, because the other kids have to see that your rules are your rules. And unless there's really extenuating circumstances, your rules are your rules. But if you get curious, now, sometimes it backfires. One of my kids who's now in high school, when he was three, he got in trouble with maybe six times in one morning. And I caught him in the 30 seconds he wasn't in timeout. And I said to him, sweetheart, you are having a really hard morning. What's going on? And he says to me, do you want to know why it's so hard for me to listen? And I said, I do. And he put his little hand on my cheek and he said, it's because you're so beautiful. And I was like, oh, get back in timeout. Oh my goodness.
What a charmer. Oh, knew how to work that one.
So I'm not saying kids won't ever try to play you. At least my kids will try to play you. But when we're teaching children anything, whether, you know, as parents we are, as teachers we are, if they're not meeting our expectations, get curious. You might already be right. You might know, but try to be curious and see if there's something going on you don't know about.
Got it. All right. I love all this because it's like little nuggets that I can take back with me tomorrow into my art room when I'm approaching these kids. And like I said, I can only see half of their face. And let me just tell you, they are a different little animal right now. And I'm curious about why that might be. My students seem very, and now I'm teaching in person. I'm not teaching virtually. But they seem very subdued. Can you kind of share with me that? What is this that I'm experiencing and seeing?
So we've given kids totally different rules of engagement this year. And whether we are seeing them virtually and trying to talk to them about shared experiences, you know, hey, what'd you guys do this weekend? And we're trying to, did you do this or that? And get them interested and engaged. We're not even sure what to guess, because there isn't the vast realm of possibilities. Their possibilities are a lot more limited right now. This is not tremendously dangerous, but I do want to touch on the health anxiety that a lot of kids are experiencing. We're talking to kids about illness and contagiousness and even death in ways that we haven't had to before. And it's important to talk to kids about how things actually are and let them know. For example, so there was some really interesting research, Cassie, with kids in neighboring villages in another country some years ago about hand washing, teaching kids hand washing. And if you went to kids in this study, and in one village they said, we need you to wash your hands so that you won't get sick. We need you to wash your hands after you go to the bathroom and before you eat so that you don't get sick. And they went to kids in the next village and said, we need you to wash your hands after you go to the bathroom and before you eat, so that your younger siblings and your grandparents don't get sick. And in the groups where they said, this is to protect other people, those kids who were from age four on up had four times as likely to wash their hands when they hadn't before as the kids who were just told they were protecting themselves. So it's a good thing that we're saying. For example, I said to my kids, I mentioned before we were doing back to school supply list. And a couple of my kids are going to be going back in person this year. The way things stand now, to your point, things are ever changing. But the way things stand now, they're going to have some opportunities for back to school. So we're coming up with the school list. And we're physically putting the boxes of Kleenex brand ultra soft tissues on the counter. And I'm saying, when will you use these? And one of my kids transparently said, when the teacher makes me. And one of my kids, who's a little bit more of a rule follower, says, when I sneeze. And I say, and also when you cough, and also when, and I'm worried that they are nodding along, but not really going to do it. So I say, this is how you protect your grandparents and your siblings and me and your teachers and your friends from coronavirus. And we get into a conversation and kids ask hard questions like, well, what's the big deal or what could happen? And so now we're talking to kids about how this is a disease that can kill people. And it's really important. And although, just like we say to children and have for years, you can't just run across the street. You could be hit by a car and you could die. It is important to talk to kids who are elementary school age and older about the potential stakes of them having dangerous behaviors. It's happening really frequently right now. And so that's giving kids some anxiousness. It's different than anxiety, which is a disease or a mental health challenge. We want kids to be cautious and anxious about this. Just like when I take my kids sightseeing to a national park and we go up on a high, I want them to be anxious about the possibility of falling off that cliff.
So that I want careful. Them
to step back so that they're careful. Kids who have no caution are the most frightening to teach or to raise. But we have swung the pendulum because the world is right now pretty dangerous. And so we're seeing that kids are being more careful and therefore they're a lot more subdued.
And let me just tell you, I think a lot of teachers were concerned when we were going back in person that the kids wouldn't keep their masks on, that they wouldn't, want to wash their hands as frequently or use hand sanitizer. These kids have been, I've only had two that I've had to remind, hey, we've got to keep our mask on to keep ourselves safe. But they've been amazing. So I think that if there's any teachers out there that are thinking that they're going to struggle with this, from my point of view, my kids have done a really great job. I know we touched on this earlier, but one thing in high demand for teachers this year is, like I mentioned before, just support from our communities, because like I said, things are so fluid, it's all up in the air, and it's important to ensure that teachers have the resources they need to lead student learning for both online and in-person settings, which is why Kleenex Brand has partnered with Donors Choose. Can you tell us more about that partnership?
Yeah, I am so impressed with Kleenex Brand because Donors Choose is this incredible nonprofit crowdfunding site where teachers can make requests for the materials that they need and the supplies that they need, as opposed to, just getting a box of things that might help someone. They get to say these basic supplies or the materials that promote physical and emotional well-being and can help kids manage stress. And teachers often do need help acquiring those supplies. They already dig into their own pocket and their own closets and their own tablecloth comes off the table and comes to school. Kleenex Brand is making a donation of up to $1.2 million in 2020 to support requests from teachers on Donors Choose. So, and anybody who's listening can go to donorschoose.com/Kleenex to find out more about how they're supporting teachers this year. And you can make a wish list for your classroom.
That's amazing because, right now, our teachers especially, we're all kind of like up in arms because many of us are being asked to create individual kits for our students. A lot of our teachers out there can't have students share supplies, and I can, but I have to have my kids wash their hands or sanitize a lot. So there's a need for that. So I love that you can kind of customize a list of things that you specifically need. How does it promote the overall well-being of students and young minds? How is this, what Kleenex is doing with Donors Choose, how is it able to do that?
This is, it's lovely to give something that you think somebody else needs, but teachers are the experts in their students and in their classrooms and in youth development. And so what Kleenex Brand has done is they've put this money towards teachers themselves. They're not saying, hey, we're going to just give this one thing that we think you need. They're saying they're putting their faith and their donations to teachers' expertise. And that's what's going to help individual students. Because Cassie, what your art K through fourth art students at your school might need might be totally different than what the K through fourth arts curriculum at my kid's school needs. And what you happen to have extra of from last year or what we don't have enough of and never have, it's different. And not only are the physical supplies really valuable, this is a time when teachers need to hear that we believe in teachers' expertise, that we recognize that we need teachers, that our kids could not grow up to be the amazing people that they're going to grow up to be with only their parents to influence them. They need other trusted professional adults. And I, like so many parents I know, am incredibly grateful to teachers for all of the effort and the thinking about my kids while they're, getting ready in the morning and the the notes they're jotting down on Post-its and napkins while they're and they're getting distracted while they're having a conversation with someone because they have a great idea for their classroom. It is a 24/7 thought process and a tremendously important job. And I hope that the appreciation that a lot of parents got for the hard work of managing their kids' education last year during the shelter-in-place orders, I hope that teachers really feel, really notice, really hear that gratitude this year.
Yeah, I loved all the funny memes and the GIFs and the different things that came out of parents like, oh my gosh, take a
break. Shonda Rhimes, who is a showrunner for some amazing television shows, her tweet 1 week into it was, teachers should all be paid $1 million a week.
A week, I'll take it.
Yep.
Well, let me just tell you, many years ago, I think it was maybe after my first year teaching, I was feeling tons and tons of stress, and I'd never felt this kind of anxiety before. And I remember going to a doctor, it was a physician, just kind of telling her how I was feeling. And she said to me, you know, gosh, what is it that you do for a living? I was listening to her all of my symptoms. And I said, I'm an art teacher. And I remember the look on her face, just like I just told her the most ridiculous joke ever. And
yeah,
she took off her glasses and she was like, why are you stressed? And I just want to say thank you for acknowledging that no matter where we are, what we do, we all are, like you said, we have a valid right to our feelings.
Right. And she gave you the opposite of empathy. She said, oh, your feelings are dumb.
Pretty much. So I just want to say thank you, because chatting with you over these last couple of episodes has been absolutely wonderful. You've opened my eyes. I've taken tons of notes. So I honestly can't thank you enough, because by helping and chatting with me, you've helped countless other art teachers and teachers out there, as well as their students. So ripple effects there, Dr. G.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really hard. And thank you to your listeners too. It's really hard to trust someone who isn't an educator to speak about your experience as an educator. You are an expert in what you're going through, but I hope that some of the strategies that I've worked on with other groups and my own experience as the daughter of a lifelong educator earns me enough of a foot in the door that you can take the suggestions that I have and see which ones work for you and for your students.
For sure. Well, thank you so much.
Take care. Have a really wonderful day and happy back to school.
Thank you. A great big old thank you to Dr. G for joining us on these last two podcast episodes. So many helpful tips. And to Kleenex Brand for donating up to $1.2 million via the educational nonprofit site Donors Choose. Again, if you missed episode number 3 or part 1 of our chat with Dr. G, don't forget to go back and tune in. See you guys real soon. Take care.